All right. My name is Matt Rinkemeyer. I'm the Director of Leadership Giving in the Archdiocese of Cincinnati, and I'm honored to be a moderator for this session. And I want to thank you again for being here with you, with us, and with Thrivent for this presentation. I'd like to introduce Cindy. And Cindy is a senior gift planner with Thrivent Charitable Impact and Investing. She serves as the senior gift planner and has since 2004. And in her role as gift planner, she provides guidance, support, and training to financial professionals across the country and consults with donors, their advisors, developing giving solutions that meet their charitable and financial goals. Cindy's a graduate of the University of Oregon and worked in public relations prior to moving into the nonprofit sector and served on a number of nonprofit boards and committees, including Simpson Housing Services and Minnesota Gift Planning Association, where I understand you're currently the chair. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's wonderful. Also a certified fundraising executive and lives in Minneapolis, active in your neighborhood association, I understand, and enjoys outdoor adventures, traveling with friends, and we're blessed to have her here with us and have Thrivent as a gold sponsor for ICSC. So please give it up for Cindy.
Thank you so much. Come on in if you folks are joining us. Welcome. Thank you all for being here. I'm so happy to be with you here today. Sorry about the mix-up on the schedule. I'm so glad you could all join me here this morning. I'm thrilled to be with you all and to be talking about the many different ways that people can give and support the ministries that you all represent. As just a little bit of background, this presentation is not designed to provide tax or legal or accounting advice. Our purpose today is to review a wide variety of giving options available to you and your supporters, and donors should consult with their own advisors before acting on any suggestions presented in this presentation.
There is always light in the world, but sometimes it's not easy to see. Generosity brightens that light, magnifies it, spreads it so that more can see it, and in turn, share it themselves. A gift is a blessing. It is warmth and beauty. It's a surprising joy to both those who give and those who receive. At Thrivent Charitable, generosity is infused in our being, from our earliest days to this moment and into the future we help our donors build. Ignited by faith, we have the privilege, the joy, of enabling generosity every day. We help people realize that the change they want to create in the world, the light they want to shine, is truly at their fingertips. Maybe they didn't think they had the means. Maybe they didn't think it could be so simple. But yes, it can be. That's our passion. We make generosity as easy for anyone as turning on a light. We open the joy of generosity to all.
All right, so before we dive into the many different ways that people can give, let's first discuss the different reasons people give. Based on a survey of thousands of different donors that give through Thrivent Charitable, the top motivators for giving are to help others out of gratitude or in response to life's blessings, to create positive impact in people's lives, and then falling far behind some of the other reasons for potential tax or benefits or advantages. So while this presentation sometimes brings up or focuses on the tax advantages associated with certain giving types, I want you to keep in mind that that's not the main motivator or factor for the donors when they're making those gifts. Rather, it might be one of the reasons for the timing of the gift or the asset that they chose to gift. So it's one of the factors in the reasoning behind the gift, but not the main motivating factor. So now that we understand why people give, let's take a look at some of the reasons or the ways that people express their generosity. So spontaneous giving is typically spur of the moment, and donations are usually smaller. Examples might include disaster relief. So think about maybe a typhoon happening across the world and people giving to the Red Cross, or maybe a tornado in the Midwest and people responding. Or maybe a neighborhood kid comes and knocks on your door asking for donations to their scout troop and you make a small donation. Now, intentional giving is donations made on a regular basis, such as weekly giving that we put in the plate on Sunday, or maybe annual gifts that we make to our college or other charities that we support on a regular basis. And these are gifts that we budget for and give out of our income, just like other things that we budget for each year. Now, planned giving, on the other hand, is part of an overall financial or estate plan. Now, oftentimes people think of planned giving as giving at death through a will, and that's certainly a popular way to make a planned gift, but it's not the only way. So today we're going to look at the many different ways to make a planned gift. At Thrivent Charitable, we like to say you can give now, you can give later, or you can give and receive. So first, let's take a look at some examples of giving now that we would still consider a planned gift. We're all familiar with the idea of taking out our checkbook and writing out a check to make a donation. But by being a little bit more strategic and giving from our assets rather than giving from our income, we can maximize our tax benefits and afford a much more generous gift. One of the simplest ways to make a planned gift is to make a gift of appreciated securities. By transferring shares directly to charity, you avoid having to pay the capital gains tax that you would otherwise have to recognize. And you get a deduction for the full fair market value of the shares. Let's say you have 1,000 shares of Acme Company that you bought at $1 a share, and now they're worth $2 a share. If you first sold them in order to make a gift to your church, you would have to pay capital gains tax on that $1,000 worth of gain. And at today's 15% tax rate, that means you'd have to pay $150 in taxes. So now you only have $1,850 left to give. But if you gifted the shares directly to the church, they could sell them tax-free, so they'd get the full $2,000, and you'd get a tax deduction for the full $2,000 as well. Better for the church and better for you. Now, I recently worked with a woman in Minnesota who attended an educational event that was hosted by her financial advisor, and she learned about this idea, and she was interested in donating some shares that she had inherited from her mother some time ago, and they'd grown to the point where she was kind of stagnated. She didn't want to do anything with them because they'd grown to the point where she was afraid to sell them because of the tax bill that would be coming due. And so when she learned about this idea of gifting them, she contacted her financial advisor and said she was interested in setting up a donor advised fund to gift those shares so that she could make gifts to different charities at different times to the charities she wanted to support. So after the event, she met with me and decided to move forward. She set up a donor advised fund and made a gift of the shares into that donor advised fund. Now she's able to make grants from that donor advised fund to different charities that she wants to support at different times. And she's gotten her daughter involved as well. Her daughter is an international school teacher, and she is teaching at different countries. She teaches in one country for a couple of years, and then she moves to a different country. And she's having a great time traveling around the world, but she's not making a lot of money. And so one of the ways that her mother is offering a little bit of support is allowing her to make grants to different charities that she wants to support from that donor advised fund that her mother set up. And it's a way that they can stay connected as well. They talk about the fund, and it allows them to stay connected. And at some point in the future, when her mother passes away, the daughter will take over that fund and maybe even involve her children in granting money from the fund. And that's the way that the mother is passing on her philanthropic values to her daughter and eventually her granddaughter. Now, at Thrive and Charitable, we also accept gifts of more illiquid assets, such as real estate or closely held stock from small businesses. And this is a way that the charity doesn't have to take on the due diligence or the risk of accepting these more complex assets. A few years back, I worked with a couple in Minnesota. The husband and wife owned a cabin up north. I don't know about in other areas of the country, but in Minnesota, this is a big deal. People have cabins on a lake. And so this couple had this cabin. They were getting to the age where they could no longer keep it up very well. And their kids had moved away and weren't interested in really coming to the cabin anymore. And so they decided that this would be a good asset for them to gift. And they decided to give it away towards the end of the year. He had gotten some extra income unexpectedly from the sale of another asset and decided he needed a tax deduction. Well, since it was the end of the year, it was winter, and we needed to inspect the cabin to make sure that it was something that we could accept. There were no issues in terms of liability or anything with the cabin. And so that meant I needed to go trudging down like about a quarter of a mile path in the about a foot of snow to go look at this cabin and take a look at it. Well, we decided, yes, it's a nice cabin, no issues with mold or anything like that. So we decided to accept the gift. But since it wasn't winterized, we couldn't really put it on the market until spring. Well, this guy is, he's a very nice gentleman, but he's one of those guys, I would describe him as a little curmudgeon-y, kind of like one of those grumpy old men that from that movie that was set in Minnesota. Everything had to be just so. He was calling pretty frequently to make sure that everything was set up properly, that when we got it on the market, he was giving me a lot of advice about how we should market the property, telling me who to call to make sure that we would get some good offers, who we might call about selling the property to, things like that. So finally we got an offer that we both agreed was a good one. We got the property sold, and I was so excited and thought, okay, that's all done. We've got the money into the donor advised fund. He's going to be happy. Well, about 2 or 3 weeks later, or maybe it was a month, he called. And someone, I was in the office, someone called and said, Cindy, Don's on the phone. And I'm like thinking, what now? What could he be complaining about now? So I walked over to the phone, I picked up the phone, and I said, Don, how are you doing? And I was actually surprised because he was calling to tell me that he had made his first grant from his donor advised fund. And he was just calling because he was so excited to tell me that he had granted $20,000 to an organization called Union Cafe Ministries, and he was he had made a grant to help set up an outreach ministry near the University of Minnesota, and they opened a coffee shop that was an outreach ministry to for fellowship for youth, where they could come and have music and fellowship. And he was just so excited that he had helped open that coffee shop and supported that ministry. And the change in him was just wondrous. He was so full of joy and so excited to have helped open that ministry. All right, so I've been talking a little bit about donor advised funds. So a donor advised fund basically is a fund that the donor sets up under the legal umbrella of the fund advisory organization, such as Thrive and Charitable. It's a way that a donor can make a gift today, receive the tax deduction when they need it, and then distribute support to their church or their charities later, either over time or when the time is right for the charity. Another great example of this is a family that I worked with in the Pacific Northwest. They had this great family tradition where ever since the first grandchild turned 8 years old, he got to go on a summer trip with grandma and grandpa, all by himself without his parents along. And then as each grandchild turned 8, they got to join that trip. So what started out as one or two kids going and flying off to Disneyland or someplace like that with grandma and grandpa eventually turned into 16 grandkids caravanning across the country with the grandparents and the older kids helping drive and take care of the younger kids. And it was a great way for them to get to know their cousins and get to know their grandparents on a different level than they would have if their parents had been along. And so then when it came time for the grandparents to retire, they decided that they needed to sell off the family business. And it was a time when, since they were selling the business, they decided that they needed to do some planning. And in working with their financial advisor, they decided that they wanted to set up a donor advised fund, put some proceeds from the sale of the business into the donor advised fund as a way to offset some of the sale proceeds in order to get a deduction and help offset some of that extra income. And as a way to help pass on some of their philanthropic values to their grandkids. And so they set up this donor advised fund, and they called it the 8 and Over Fund. And now every year when they go on that family trip with the grandkids, as part of the trip, they gather the grandkids around, and they talk about what charities they want to benefit from the fund that year. And the kids get to suggest charities that they might want to benefit, and they talk about what ones they're going to benefit for the year. And someday in the future, when the grandparents pass away, the kids will take over that fund, and they'll be granting to the charities in memory of Grandma and Grandpa, and it'll be a way that the family will still come together. Now, while we know that donors aren't strictly motivated by potential tax benefits, there are still some strategies that can help them give in a more affordable way. Following the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, two giving solutions have grown significantly in popularity since the higher threshold for the standard deduction has limited the number of people who are itemizing each year. And those two are the qualified charitable distribution and bundling charitable gifts. So bundling or bunching gifts into one tax year is a strategy that has become increasingly popular with the use of donor advised funds. So the way that this works, if you're not familiar, is people will look at their budget for giving charitable gifts and multiply that by the number of years they need in order to get past the standard deduction. So let's say I, as a single person, give $5,000 a year to charity. Well, that's not enough for me to get past the standard deduction and itemize on my taxes, so I'm not really getting the benefit of claiming a charitable income tax deduction. But if I bunch 3 years worth of that giving into one tax year and put it into a donor advised fund, then I can itemize that year and then grant that money out over the next 3 years to my charities from the donor advised fund while I'm taking the standard deduction. So some of you might have noticed this in your churches where people are giving you every 3 years or every 2 years. And that's what they're doing, is they're bunching. But sometimes that might be difficult for the churches because it messes their budgeting up, right? They don't know what to expect from year over year because people are doing this. Well, if they use a donor advised fund, then that can smooth it out for the churches and other charities that they're benefiting, because the donor advised fund accepts the gift and then they can grant to the church or the charity on a regular basis, just like they would from their income. Now, for donors who've reached the age where they are required to take a minimum distribution from their IRA, a qualified charitable distribution is a great way to help them meet that minimum requirement while avoiding the extra taxable income, and they can make that gift to charity. For those who are 70 and a half or older, they can make a qualified charitable distribution directly from their IRA to a charity without having to recognize the taxable income. Now, the IRS has raised the age where you're required to take a a minimum distribution from your IRA to 73, but they did not raise the age for the qualified charitable distribution. So you can actually take a qualified charitable distribution before you're required to take money out of your IRA. So you can start at age 70 and a half. You can do up to $105,000 annually. That's indexed for inflation, so that'll go up next year. So it doesn't have to be just your RMD, your required minimum distribution amount. It can be any amount from zero up to $105,000. And making a qualified distribution, again, enables you to avoid the disadvantages of that higher income, which keeps you in a lower tax bracket and keeps other incomes such as Medicare premiums, self-employment, and Social Security at those lower tax rates. Sure. Yeah, so the question was, would you recommend that charities or nonprofits send reminders to donors about distributing their qualified charitable distributions? And I would say absolutely yes. If you know people who are in this age bracket, or if they've sent you qualified charitable distributions in the past, I think it is a good idea to send a letter or have a newsletter article, just reminding people about the option of using a qualified charitable distribution to make a gift to you. Absolutely. So we, another question in the back. So what would be the best timeline? So people can do this during any time of the year, but if they're going to do it, it does have to be done before the end of the tax year. And so I would say fall is a good timeline. I would probably want to send it out sometime in, I would say early fall, to give them time to get it done. Yeah. They can do it any time during the year, really, but if they want to check to see if they've done it before the end of the year, what they still need to do, give them time to talk to their financial advisor. Early fall would be a good time to send out a letter. So one example of a donor that we worked with created a scholarship in this way. He was a commercial airline pilot for American Airlines. He'd been a air mechanic in the service, and then went back to school on the GI Bill. The inspiration for his gift was actually his mother, who always taught him to help others. His father had died when he was very young, and so his mother had to go to work scrubbing floors in order to keep the family farm in the family. And so he knew he would never have been able to go to college if it hadn't been for that GI Bill. And so he wanted to provide a similar opportunity to others who were interested in aviation. So he had been able to put away quite a lot of money into an IRA that he didn't really need for retirement, because he had a nice pension from American Airlines and some other savings. And so his goal was originally that when he passed away, he was going to leave that IRA to charity to start that scholarship that he had in mind. But when he turned the age, when he was forced to start taking distributions from that IRA as required minimum distributions, he decided instead to accelerate that plan. And instead of waiting until he passed away, he decided to roll that IRA over into a scholarship fund at Thrivent Charitable, basically using the maximum allowable qualified charitable distribution 2 years in a row and rolling over the entire IRA into a scholarship fund and creating a scholarship to support students who are interested in aviation. And the last time I visited him, he was really excited to tell me that he was just thrilled to know that he was part of a community that was doing good work, and helping students. And he shared about a particular student that he was so excited to know that he had helped. She went to Iowa State University, which happened to be his alma mater, and she'd made it all the way through school studying aeronautical engineering, and now she works for Boeing Airlines. And he flew Boeing aircraft when he was a pilot, and so he felt a real connection with her and was just thrilled to know that he had helped her make it through school. So those were some examples of giving now, and now we're going to take a look at some examples of giving later. So give later gifts are popular options because many people need or want the flexibility of using their assets while they're alive, but also want to leave a legacy of support to their churches or charities that they care about after they're gone. Now, one of the most popular ways to give later is to name a charity in your will or living trust, but many people overlook the simplest way to make a gift at death, which is through a simple beneficiary designation. You don't have to hire an attorney to draft a legal document. You just simply update the beneficiary designation on your life insurance, retirement account, or annuity. This is actually how I'm executing my own plan. I'm single, I don't have any kids of my own, but I have four nieces and a nephew. However, I'm not dividing my estate five ways, I'm adding a sixth beneficiary called charity. Of course, it's not as simple as dividing each asset six ways. I have to decide what's the best asset to leave to family and what's the best asset to leave to church and charity. Sometimes advisors need to help families decide, you know, what's more tax efficient to leave where. You know, sometimes I'm working with families and they might have a life insurance contract that they took out when they were young in order to protect their family. But now their kids are grown and on their own. And so they decide, oh, we don't need that life insurance for protection anymore. And so we'll just leave that to charity. Meanwhile, they have their kids named as beneficiaries on their retirement accounts, either forgetting or not realizing that if the kids inherit that retirement account, they're going to have to pay income tax on that retirement fund at their own income tax rate, whereas they could inherit the life insurance tax-free. So they just need some advice on what would be the better asset to leave to family and what would be the better asset to leave to the church or charity. Now, life insurance can also be used as a way to make a gift during your lifetime and leverage it into a much larger gift at death by assigning the ownership to the church or the charity. When you gift the actual policy to the charity, any ongoing premiums become tax deductible. A lot of people like to endow a gift to their church or charity in this way. So let's say I want to endow the gift that I give to my church. So if I give, again, using the example of $5,000 annually to my church, and I want to ensure that my church gets that same support every year after I'm gone because I know that they'll miss that income, I can take out a $100,000 life insurance policy and gift it to my church's endowment fund. And then any premiums that I pay to that policy during my lifetime, once the church owns that policy, are going to be tax deductible. And then when I pass away, $100,000 in that church endowment, if it pays out, if it's invested and pays out 5% annually, is going to replace my $5,000 a year in perpetuity. One of Thrivent's very first donors used this technique. She was a piano teacher and wanted to leave enough money to her local church school's endowment to help support the music program, since she was concerned it was one of the very first things to get cut every time the budget was tight. However, she wasn't wealthy and wasn't sure she would have enough money to leave to support the program in the way that she really dreamed. But with the help of her financial advisor and Thrivent Charitable, we came up with a plan for her to gift a life insurance contract, And so she took out a policy and gifted it to the church school's endowment. And she made the premiums each year, got a tax deduction, and she was able to leverage that small annual gift into what will be $250,000 when she passes away to support that church school's music program. And she's just so excited to know that after she passes away, she's done something so big, and that after she's no longer around to give piano lessons, she'll still be bringing the joy of music into children's lives. Now, another recent donor that I worked with combined this strategy with using her qualified charitable distributions. She's a widow and has several charities that she cares about and supports on a regular basis, including her church and a hospice foundation. The hospice foundation is important to her because they helped during her husband's terminal illness. She was meeting with a financial advisor after her husband passed away, doing some planning, and she was shocked to learn how much she was going to be required to take out of her IRAs on her next birthday due to her required minimum distributions. She didn't need the money for living expenses and didn't want her income tax rate to go up. So her advisor suggested she start using those required minimum distributions as qualified charitable distributions to her charities. But she said, you know, I can't give them that much money. I can't to my charities directly. They'll think I have money. So instead of increasing her giving today, they talked about a plan to endow an amount that would replace the money she's giving to them today after she's gone. And to accomplish that goal, they took out a life insurance policy and established a fund at Thrivent Charitable that will be endowed with that life insurance contract. And after she's passed away, the benefit from the life insurance will go into that fund and pay out to the charities that she's supporting during her lifetime over time, including that hospice foundation and her church. And she pays the premiums on that life insurance contract each year by making a gift to Thrivent Charitable with her qualified charitable distribution. So she makes a qualified charitable distribution to Thrivent Charitable, and we turn around and pay the premium on that life insurance contract that she's gifted to us. So it turned out to be a great plan. She keeps her income low by not taking that RMD amount or using the QCD to make the RMD, and then using that life insurance policy to set up a fund that will continue support to her charities after she's gone. So our last category is the give and receive category. There are two types of tools that we can use to create a gift that provide a stream of income to the donor or someone else they name, either a charitable remainder trust or a charitable gift annuity. In both cases, the donor can receive an income tax deduction for the charitable portion of the gift when it's set up, and then receive income in return, and then at the termination of the gift annuity or the trust, the remainder goes to the charitable. Now, a charitable gift annuity is one of the most popular ways to give. It provides income payments to the donor or someone else they name while living, and then future support to charities. Income rates are based on age and other factors. Now, many donors find gift annuities to be a simple, effective way to convert a money market asset, a CD, or just cash that they have into an income stream. In addition to the tax deduction, a portion of the gift is usually tax-free. You can set up a gift annuity to be immediate income, deferred income, or you can set up a flexible deferred gift annuity in which you set up a window in time and the income can start any year during that window. As one example, I had a couple who were ages 65 and 67. They wanted to give to support their church's endowment fund and supplement their retirement income. Through the work of our gift planners, they created a charitable gift annuity for $50,000. They received a charitable income tax deduction of about $17,000. So since they're, it's a, considered a split interest gift, they're getting income back, so it's not all tax deductible. So of the $50,000, about $17,000 of it was tax deductible. And they got income payments off of that $50,000 of 5.1%. So again, based on their age, 5.1% of it was the income, which is about $2,550 a year for the rest of their life. And then once they pass away, whatever's remaining from that gift annuity will go into their church's endowment fund. Now, donors often use these types of gifts to add to their retirement income. I recently worked with a couple who wanted to retire from farming. So instead of using a charitable gift annuity, we looked at a charitable remainder trust. This couple had two grown children, neither of which were interested in taking over the family farm. And they were concerned about selling the property because the farmland had increased in value quite a bit since the time that they had inherited it from his father. And they knew if they sold it, there would be a huge tax bill. So instead, their financial advisors suggested that they consider gifting the farmland into a charitable remainder unit trust. So we met and talked about it, and they decided to go ahead and gift the farmland into the trust. The farmland was valued at about $646,000, and so they received a tax deduction for a little over $250,000 when they gifted that farmland into the trust and avoided capital gain of about $98,000 for the gift into the trust. Once the farmland was in the trust, Thrivent Charitable, as trustee of the trust, was able to sell it tax-free, and then the proceeds were invested inside the trust and provided a stream of income to the donors for the rest of their lives. It was about $32,000 a year. Now, since the income was a little bit more than they would have gotten if they would have just leased the land during their retirement to another farmer, they were able to take that extra income and buy life insurance for their children to replace the value of the land that they had gifted to the trust. So basically, the kids received their inheritance through life insurance, so they were not disinherited. And when they pass away, whatever's remaining in the trust will go to their charities. So the charities got a gift that would not have been there if they would have left the land to the kids to sell. The kids were not disinherited, and the parents got money in retirement from the trust. So it was a win all around. So a charitable remainder trust is a, the question was, what's the difference between a unit trust and a remainder trust? A charitable remainder trust is a broad category. There are two types of charitable remainder trust: a charitable remainder unit trust and a charitable remainder annuity trust. A charitable remainder unit trust offers variable income, which means it pays out a percentage of the value of the trust each year. And a charitable remainder annuity trust offers fixed income, which means it pays a percentage of the original gift amount each year. With an annuity trust, often called a CRAT, you can only make one gift into it because it's based on that original gift amount, the payout. With a charitable remainder unit trust, because it's variable income based on the value of the trust each year, you can make multiple gifts into the unit trust. So are they gift annuities or CRATs? So gift annuities are different than charitable remainder trusts. So a charitable remainder trust is a separate legal entity, just like any other trust. You have to file tax returns because they're separate entities. They have their own tax ID number. Whereas a gift annuity is just a separate, it's just a contract between the charity and the donor that says that in return for making a gift, the charity is going to pay the donor an income. So it's not a separate legal entity. Usually you have reserves invested that are going to hold the gift amount to pay that income to the donor. So, yeah. So with a gift annuity, you can go into the red if the donor outlives their life expectancy, and but that's why you have reserves, because some people will die earlier than their life expectancy, and some people will outlive their life expectancy, and you might have a pool that will, it's all about sort of mitigating those risks by having a larger pool. But there's actuarials that go into all of that. Yeah. Yeah, so I think that gift annuities are good if you have a large enough pool to, again, mitigate your risks. If you're a small shop, I would partner with a community foundation or someone like Thrivent Charitable to administer the gift annuities rather than trying to administer them yourself. Yeah. All right, so here are some next steps that you might take to get you started on your charitable journey. Identify your passions. What values do you want to express through your giving? What issues, interests, or causes do your donors most care about? Think about your resources. A review of your assets, living expenses can help reveal opportunities to live what you believe. Talk to a local financial advisor to help you determine the best course. And then put a plan in place. And at this point, I'm happy to take any further questions that you might have.
What is the most popular, what would you say amongst the Catholic community, the different gifting options that you just walk us through?
So what is the most popular gifting option that, so currently, I would say the most popular that we're seeing currently are qualified charitable distributions. Again, because of the change in the tax law, qualified charitable distributions have become quite popular. We're seeing an uptick in gift annuities recently with the increase in the interest rates. So for a while, they were really popular. Then when the interest rates got low, they kind of went away for a while. They're starting to become popular again. Another thing that I didn't really talk about today, but that is becoming increasingly popular, is testamentary charitable remainder trusts. So setting up a trust in your will to receive IRA assets. So it used to be that you could inherit an IRA and stretch out receiving the income from it over a 20-year period or a lifetime. They changed the rules about that, and now you have to get that income out within 10 years. A solution for that is to set up a trust in your will and allow that allows you to pay out the income from that IRA over 20 years or a lifetime. And so that's kind of a solution for to replace the stretch IRA. That's become popular as well. Question in the back. To initiate the conversation around qualified charitable distributions. So there's an organization called Leave a Legacy. Are you familiar with Leave a Legacy? Leave a Legacy is an organization that has a lot of good template language that you can download. I would recommend going to their website. They're not faith-based, but they have a lot of language around planned giving. So that might be a source. We do have some sample language on our website, thriventcharitable.com, that you could download as well. That we have a handout on qualified charitable distributions. Yeah, Stelter.com. Yeah, they have. I think they might have to pay for some of their brochures. Yeah. PlannedGiving.com is another good resource. PlannedGiving.com.
Is any for folks in the room who maybe are looking at doing planned giving seminars or stuff, either because they're diocese foundation or even a parish, right? Could you talk about the availability of your advisors to help with that?
Yeah, so Thriving Financial Advisors have access to presentations similar to this one, and would be more than willing to come out and present to groups of your supporters. So you can contact a local Thrivent financial advisor. You can contact Sue, who is in the back somewhere, I think. Just your local community engagement leader in your community, or call 800-365-4172, which is the Thrivent charitable number, and we can get you in contact with someone locally as well. Any other questions?
Any other questions? All right. Well, join me in giving Cindy a round of applause. Thank you so much, Cindy, for the information today. For those of you who might be involved in regional meetings, we're blessed to have Thrivent join us in Region 6 for our annual meeting this past summer, and share a little bit about this, but specifically in light of different stages of life, right? So there's a lot of great content out there from the folks at Thrivent on just helping connect with our donors and taking from those main motivations, but also helping them consider some of these other benefits as well, tax advantages and such. So thank you, Cindy, so much for your time today. And you can visit them down in the exhibitor hall as well. I think it sounds like that's where Sue probably is if you want to learn more. I hope you'll enjoy the rest of your morning. We got another day of sessions here, and then we'll have our plenary session again in the Empire Ballroom, I believe at 11:45. I forgot to double check that time, but we'll be back there for our lunch and plenary session at lunchtime today. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.